This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's radio. Free radio.
The F Word, Vancouver's explicitly feminist radio show. Filling your head with naughty feminist ideas since 2007.
The F Word is a syndicated show produced in Vancouver, BC, Canada at CFRO 100.5 FM, Vancouver's cooperative radio station. And every Monday from noon to 1, we broadcast live from the downtown east side of Vancouver, unceded Coast Salish territory.
Kitty has a nosebleed.
On the rag.
Aunt Dot.
Aunt Flo is coming for a visit.
Falling to the communists.
Closed for maintenance.
My little friend.
Surfing the crimson wave.
Bleedies.
At high tide.
My moon cycle.
Moon time.
That time of the month.
Friend from the Red Sea.
The curse.
I'm Carissa Raponin, here with Ariana Bearer, and you just heard a myriad of euphemisms we use to describe menstruation. Today on the show, we will be discussing menstruation, deconstructing some of the patriarchal beliefs about women's cycles, and celebrating our flows. So you heard us list off a number of names for menstruation that are reflective of our culture's attitude towards the period. I think the curse is probably the most telling of all the euphemisms that we named, as it kind of defines the period is a horrible affliction rather than a natural part of women's monthly cycles. Instead of celebrating women's cycles, we are taught to resent menstruation and even feel ashamed of it. So today's show is an effort to destigmatize the period and celebrate the female body. Our culture tells us that menstruation is something shameful that needs to be hidden. In fact, our periods are kind of a taboo. Not only that, but menstruation and everything around it, read PMS, premenstrual syndrome, are medicalized and pathologized, a problem that needs a fix. But having a period is a part of many women's experience, so why are our periods and moods surrounding them viewed in such a negative light? Why all this talk about periods being unnatural, dirty, diseased? This certainly harkens back to patriarchy and its obsession with degrading women and our bodies. If we no longer believe in ourselves, see ourselves and our bodies as having value, then it is much easier to control us. Patriarchal religious beliefs have been used to shame women and our bodies. It is pretty much a universal belief today in the world's largest religions that during menstruation, a woman is unclean and needs to be purified. For example, the Bible says in Leviticus that menstruating women are unclean for 7 days. Anything they touch will be made unclean, and that men should not have sex with a woman on her period, lest he too become unclean.
Well, feminist Jewish Talmudic scholar Judith Hauptmann has studied the rules for women around cleanliness and menstruation, and I was fascinated to see that she points out the need to understand these rules around women within the context of the first chapter in Leviticus, because that portion actually addresses the issue of male impurity and cleanliness. Imagine that. So apparently, after a man has an emission of semen, he shall count off 7 days for his cleansing, wash his clothes, and bathe his body in fresh water, then he shall be clean. So just interesting to think why these cleanliness rules survived and developed over time for women, but not for men.
That is really interesting. So also in the Victorian era, menstruation was medicalized and pathologized. Victorian doctors labeled menstruation a debilitating illness, under which women were said to be unwell or out of order. Not only did Victorian doctors believe that menstruation was a condition, but they believed that during menstruation, women were mentally incapable of being rational and working. The British Medical Journal of January 1875 said, "At such times, women are unfit for any great mental or physical labor. They suffer under languor and depression, which disqualify them for thought or action." These days, I hear a lot about PMS and all the problematic ways women behave when we are bleeding. Our moods have been pathologized to the point that they get called a syndrome, a cluster of quote-unquote symptoms that collectively indicate or characterize a disease, psychological disorder, or other abnormal condition. Unquote. I find it incredibly offensive that my moods are being likened to a psychological disorder. But you know, ignore me, I'm probably just irritated because I'm on my rag. But menstruation was not always seen negatively. In ancient spirituality, and certainly in many indigenous belief systems today, menstruation was viewed in a positive light, and women were believed to be connected to the moon because of our 28-day cycle. The moon was sacred and worshipped as a female deity, and was chief to all other goddesses and gods. As Asphodel P. Long, a feminist theologian, writes, "The triple goddess is available to us in all sorts of symbols, records, and illustrations. She was a source of growth, fertility, and change. And in her waning and dark side, she represented the mystical power of death and rebirth. Her 28-day cycle was observed as the same cycle as that of women's menses. Menstruation was thought to be linked to the moon, and in many languages, the words for both are the same. Thus, women were thought to be connected with the great and mysterious power of the moon." So, menstruation has not always been viewed as unclean, but rather as powerful and sacred. How would it be if our culture started to shift in the direction of celebrating women's cycles in this way? This is The F Word. My name's Carissa Raponin. I'm here with Ariana Bearer, and we are talking about menstruation.
And in an effort to subvert society's shaming of women and periods, we are going to have a bit of a feminist discussion where we break the silence on menstruation and let our stories flow. Carissa wrote "Let Our Stories Flow," and I think that's hilarious.
Try.
So my mom and my grandma tell me about the really enormous and uncomfortable pads that they used to have to connect to their underwear with safety pins and hooks or tabs or suspenders. And some of them were just built right into the underpants themselves. And you can actually look these up and see pictures of them on the Museum of Menstruation website. Yes, that exists.
My mom told me about a similar type of pad, but it was strapped in with a belt. Really comfortable.
Self-adhesive pads were only available after the 1970s, and these contraptions were so horrible that it's no wonder that girls and women dreaded their periods. I heard one story from someone who told me that no one talked to her about her period when she was young, so she got it in school and bled all over the desk seat, and she actually got up to hand in some papers, and the teacher, who was a woman, didn't say anything to her, and when she finally realized, she ran to her locker and put on her jacket and had to go to the washroom to deal with it all by herself as a young girl. And another person remembers having to make up excuses about not being able to go swimming with everyone else for 2 weeks and feeling really worried that they would figure out why she couldn't go, as if it was a horrible, horrible secret. It's taken our whole lives to alienate us from our bodies, so I imagine that it will take time to reacquaint ourselves and learn how to be experts of our own experiences and respond in ways that feel right and good. Inga Muscio, who is the author of the book Cunt, says, "By the time we're 12 or so, society has convinced the vast majority of women that it is in our best interest to remain incontestably oblivious to our bodies outside the realm of tormenting ourselves into reflecting a certain standard of physical beauty." Inga describes her own experience of learning about periods in school, where the girls were separated out from the boys, heaven forbid boys learn anything about female anatomy, and brought in for the talk about becoming a woman. Okay, first of all, one single thing that your body does shouldn't determine your entire gender identity. Lots of women don't bleed every month. Trans women, postmenopausal women, high-level athletes. And second, what kind of effect does it have on a group of people constructed by society to know that when they enter into that identity, it's through this horrible, awful event that you just have to deal with by yourself and never talk about? Inga talks about having to watch a video that told girls to keep spotlessly clean because menstruating girls tend to stink up the room if they're not completely at one with personal hygiene. The video also told girls that any pain or discomfort they might feel resided in their heads and had been collectively imagined by womankind for thousands of years. I just read that and I think, how could you not grow up feeling dirty, inconvenient to others, angry or disconnected from your body, or just totally alone? So this is really vastly different from my own experience, and I feel very fortunate about that, that when I was 11, my mom sat me down and told me about getting your period. She explained about pads and tampons, and I got my period at camp that summer, and one of the cool girls told me that I could talk to her about it if I wanted. And then when I told my mom I'd gotten my period, she bought me a woman's symbol necklace, and then we found out about organic non-bleached cotton tampons, and so we bought those instead. And then when I joined my university's women's center, I found out about the menstrual cup. That was about 10 years later, and we went out and got one of those. So I can't begin to understand how much this insulated me from misogyny around menstruation, but I know the impact this had on me and my relationship with my body was certainly profound. And I look forward to doing the same for my goddaughter. Women have different ways of honoring the fact that they're on their monthly cycle. Some need quiet and stillness, Others need friends or food or baths. If we actually had the space to do the things our bodies are asking for during these times, instead of, say, working in an office or factory or taking care of children, we likely wouldn't feel grumpy or anxious or sad as much. We might actually stop feeling negatively towards a bodily ritual that so profoundly and routinely reinforces how spectacular the human body is and its power to make life. In the totally life-changing book, The Red Tent, author Anita Diamant wrote, "The Great Mother, whom we call Inanna, gave a gift to women that is not known among men, and this is the secret of blood. The flow at the dark of the moon, the healing blood of the moon's birth. To men, this is flux and distemper, bother and pain. They imagine we suffer and consider themselves lucky. We do not disabuse them. In the red tent, the truth is known. In the red tent, where days pass like a gentle stream, as the gift of Inanna courses through us, cleansing the body of last month's death, preparing the body to receive the new month's life, women give thanks for repose and restoration, for the knowledge that comes from between our legs, and that life costs blood."
I remember before I started my first period, I was really nervous to start it, and I figured that I'd be incredibly embarrassed when I did. So I started preparing for it by squirreling away menstrual products. Every time I would use my mom's bathroom, I would sneak a tampon or a pad out of her cupboard, and I would hide them in the small cardboard box that I had that used to contain Finnish chocolates, you know, those liquor chocolates like brandy beans or something. And so I had this little box, and I'd put my little pads and tampons in there. And then I remember the day that I did start my period, I actually felt comfortable telling my mother, which was really shocking to me. And so I just went up to her and I said, "Mom, I started my period." And she gave me a hug, and that's how that started. So next up, we're going to play clips of a conversation I had with an amazing feminist woman, Khalida Ibrahimi. And I'm really glad that I got to sit down with her and hear her thoughts on menstruation, hear her story of her first period. And we're going to play that for you now.
The first time you get your period, it's likely nobody talked to you about it. I was like a little over 9. And I thought I was dying, because my mom never, like, I didn't even know what it was, right?
There
was
I'd never
heard about it, but I thought I was dying. I thought it was like my whole insides were coming out and bleeding, right? For 24 hours, I actually just didn't say anything and dealt with it, which is like just crumpling toilet paper and wearing it in between my legs and sitting as if, like, if you sit tight enough, it will stop. But I used so much paper that my mom found like a bucket full of bloody paper, toilet paper. The next day she's like, "What is this? Who's, or is somebody hurt or something?" Then I'm like, "This is what's happening." And she's like, "Okay, let's go." And then she showed me what to do. But I kind of was mad. I'm like, why wouldn't anybody tell me? And so because I was the oldest sister, then my sisters got it from me. How taboo menstruation is, like just talking about it, even between women, the way like it's talked in code, right? When you get your monthly period or cycle or
your time,
your time, or because in our language it's called like when you get sick.
And I know Khalida that I've heard you talk about almost celebrating periods before and the experiences that women go through and the difference in mood, and people constantly talk about PMS, and we've medicalized it in their Western culture, PMS, premenstrual syndrome, like it's a sickness and a problem. But I know something that you said once to me, you mentioned to me about celebrating that.
Well, for me it starts, like, look at it this way. Like, for women in general, like, society in general always has these ways that is, like, they're prescriptions for everything. Right? A prescription for how you should feel, and if you feel this way, then change it and be this way. Changing our moods, changing our ways. If you feel sad, you can't show that because that's not okay. I can't deal with it in this room, so hold on to your sadness somewhere else. It's just always changing the way we are and not being present for that, right? And so the way that we feel when we're going through our cycle, or that moon time, that's called, right? Or our, you know, ovulation, menstruation, whatever you want to call it. Whatever you're feeling, why isn't it accepted as this is the way I feel? Like, I am today irritated at everything, or I am today so happy. Like, everybody is lovely, everything. It's just that you kind of have to be a way, not the way, right? Mm-hmm. And so that celebration of you as who you are and how you feel doesn't matter if it matches or it falls in line with the how people expect you to be or want you to be. And that's where I think the mood stuff comes. You know, why isn't it okay for if my body's going through something, mm-hmm. and I am sensitive to light or sound, or because I'm in pain, I'm a little bit irritated at everything, why isn't that okay for me to just be the way it is, right? And it's called symptoms of PMS or sickness, or that I should take a pill for it and change it, right? Mm-hmm. And so that kind of celebration of accepting that you, something is happening in your body, and it will impact how you see the world, and it will impact how you interact with the rest of the world and how you feel, and to be okay with it, to accept it, to celebrate it, to know that it's happening and you don't have to change it unless you want to because it's really painful. But mm-hmm. that's again, like, it's up to you, right? Not so much what you should do. This is something that you take care of in private. Mm-hmm. Don't talk about it. If you feel certain things, change it, because you know, that's not a good thing. Like, those are PMS symptoms, therefore not okay. And everyone, like, for the first time when I say, like, but it's you, it's about you, and you know, why is it celebrated, and why don't you feel like you have to actually pay extra attention to yourself? There's like shocked about that.
And there's a lot of messages from our different religious backgrounds about menstruation, and oftentimes from my background anyways, I come from a Christian background, and there's messages about periods being unclean. I was wondering if you have anything to share from your own cultural religious backgrounds, and or maybe ways that you interpret things, or...
Well, I don't think it falls far from like any interpretation from any religion, mine or yours, falls too far away from patriarchal or male domination of how culture or religion or even scripture texts were interpreted, which was, you know, isolation, segregation, demeaning or degrading of women's experiences of normal and natural. I assign it, like, personally to patriarchy and male control of women's bodies and behavior. Messages that were given to women is that what's happening with their body is not clean. This is a sickness, it's something you take care of it in private, men don't touch you, because there are a certain, like, even, and I think it's an all, but that even if men touch women while they're going through their menstruation, the men mm-hmm. get unclean and they have to clean up. Like, that's the kind of stigma and taboo attached to menstruation. Mm-hmm. And I think it's about women feeling afraid, women being afraid of actually looking at their body in a positive way.
One thing I think that's really interesting about that is the idea that even if men touch women who are menstruating, they become unclean, which somehow, if you think about it in a particular way, I don't think patriarchy intended it to be this way, but it's almost an acknowledgement of women having power.
Well, it is, because women's sexuality, the reason why it was deliberately and directly oppressed for the fact that there is a lot of power in women, women's will, women's bodies, women, because we are the source of birth and regeneration. We are, you know, what makes the world go round, I think. Imagine, like, no one else could have, like, the kind of powers you have. But it also is connected to women's sexuality, right? And so that's really powerful, and to oppress that or to repress it and to taboo women when their bodies are absolutely, you know, growing and rebirthing and rejuvenating, which is your cycle, your monthly, like, 28-day, whatever, 21-day cycle. And at the time, like, or masturbation, for women to actually feel good or explore their own bodies to see, like, what feels good or whatnot, all of that to be taboo, you're controlling. You're controlling one thing that, like, or the thing that could be as powerful as, like, it could possibly be. And I think it has everything to do with the control of women's sexuality, women's... I see patriarchy and all the messages towards women as control of women's body and behavior, like BB. When you control their body and behavior, you control that.
You're listening to The F Word, and that was a guest that Carissa interviewed, Khalida Ebrahimi, who is a local feminist.
So we're talking about menstruation today, and now we're going to start talking about radical feminist hygiene. So, as we spoke about earlier in today's program, our menstrual culture is rooted in a shaming of women, and often this comes across as menstruation being defined as dirty or unclean. And so this is what the feminine hygiene industry plays off of in order to sell us their products, presenting menstruation to us as a problem that needs to be dealt with discreetly. Since the topic of menstruation is so taboo, most information that is available to young women just starting their periods about menstruation is offered by the feminine hygiene industry, whose main objective is to market their products. So in order to keep a market for their products, they must perpetuate myths that menstruation is embarrassing and should be kept a dirty little secret. So they come up with wonderful marketing messages such as discreet, small, extends and protects, only you'll know it's a tampon, or small enough to keep out of sight. These phrases bank on shame and the fear of people knowing we are having our periods and reinforce the cultural belief that menstruation is a shameful condition. God forbid someone knows you're on your rag, but it's treated like it's the unpardonable sin, that you may contaminate those around you if they know that you're bleeding. Even the words feminine hygiene invoke the feeling that there's something unclean about the way our bodies function and that we require a product to make us hygienic again. Other advertisements insist that a tampon will give you the freedom to go on living life as normal. We've all seen commercials with a sad girl sitting in her room unable to take part in day-to-day activities. But then she finds out about tampons and soon enough, she's riding horses, playing sports, twirling barefoot on the beach. The message in these commercials reinforce social stigma about menstruation and I think are kind of dangerous because they tell young women that our periods are an irregularity and in order to continue living normally, a product needs to be used. This could be no farther from the truth. Menstruation is a big part of women's lives and is normal and natural in many ways. And the tampons that these commercials are peddling also had adverse effects on women's bodies.
I love in particular how the menstrual blood that they pour on pads and tampons is always blue. For some reason, as if it's horribly offensive to show blood being red, the color that it does usually come out.
I've often wondered about that myself, why that is. Who knows, maybe one day they'll just use pink.
Perhaps it looks more hygienic. Sanitary napkins is another favorite of mine, mm-hmm. referring to pads as sanitary napkins.
So one thing that kind of gets me about the feminine hygiene industry, and I'm kind of use hygiene in quotes, is that it perpetuates harmful attitudes about periods, but that's not the only problem. One of the biggest problems is that the products are often bad for women's bodies and bad for the earth. Menstrual products, such as a tampon, can be a health risk for women. Tampons are known to cause toxic shock syndrome, or TSS. TSS is a serious and sometimes fatal disease. In fact, in 1980, 38 women died from TSS caused by tampon use. The symptoms of TSS are a sudden high fever, vomiting, diarrhea, sunburn-like rash, dizziness, muscle aches and fainting, or near fainting when standing up. Doesn't sound like a fun time. TSS is caused by the Staphylococcus bacteria, and that grows on synthetic fibers. And it's important to note that all mainstream tampon manufacturers have at least one type of synthetic fiber in their products. So manufacturers of tampons are continuing to use highly absorbent fibers, such as viscose and rayon. Those are synthetic fibers, even though they know they are linked to TSS.
Explains so much about women being viewed as the weaker sex and frequent fainting in public and such. It's not because we're weak, it's because we're being poisoned from the inside out. Incredible.
And tampons also contain dioxins because of the bleaching process that they undergo. So in order to make tampons seem clean and they bleach them to make them sterile, quote unquote, and to make them white, to have that appearance of cleanliness. But the dioxins that remain make them anything but clean. Dioxins are toxic chemicals that have been linked to decreased sperm count in men. Yep, this affects men too. And decreased fertility in women, as well as endometriosis, which is incredibly painful. Dioxin is carcinogenic, but the fem hygiene industry insists that the amount of dioxins in tampons are so minuscule that they do not pose any real threat to women's health. But I'm not really sure about that. What about compounded exposure to dioxins month after month? And also, the dermal contact in the vagina might differ from regular dermal contact. as vaginal tissue is highly absorbent. Not only that, but tampons have also been known to alter the natural bacteria and microorganisms in the vagina. And vaginal dryness and ulcerations may occur when a tampon is too absorbent for your flow. So all of your lovely, perfectly natural, and needed secretions are being sopped up by TSS-inducing tampons. This does not sound like a great hygiene option to me. Another issue is that mainstream menstrual products are also bad for the earth. Tampons and pads create excessive waste, and the plastics in pads and tampon applicators sit in landfills. I want to note that it's absolutely true that we need to attend to our periods, and that includes having menstrual products. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have any, but we need products that are healthy for our bodies and good for the earth. So we want to take a couple minutes to discuss some alternative options, some reusable options without toxic chemicals that are great for you and great for Mother Earth. So the first one that we're going to discuss is the reusable tampon. So what this is it's used like a regular disposable tampon, but you wash it and you reuse it. The rayon in commercial disposable tampons is one of the factors in TSS. Cotton tampons, disposable or reusable, are safer options. So even if you don't want to use a reusable tampon and you want to get a disposable one, it's probably best to get one that's made from cotton and not rayon.
Another option is the interlabia pad. And the interlabial pad is basically a tampon worn externally in the labia rather than internally. These can't be worn while swimming, but they can offer a step between an internal product or a pad for those who don't want to use an internal product.
And the next one is the sea sponge. So this is a naturally occurring sea sponge that is used in the vagina to absorb the flow, kind of like a tampon. I've read online that what you can do too is you can take a piece of dental floss and kind of just loop it through the sea sponge, because sea sponge kind of a little holes and stuff in it, and then you can use that as a string so you can easily take it out. So they are moistened for use, allowing them to be comfortably inserted, and after you're done with them, you wash them and you can reuse them, and you can boil the sea sponge in a pot of water or submerge it in a sterilizing solution if you want. The only thing that's not good about this is if you're a vegan, then I guess having a sea sponge wouldn't work.
And those are available, I think, in mainstream stores, in the sort of household cleaner aisles and things like that, or at
health food stores as well, for sure.
Exactly. So the menstrual cup is my favorite alternative option.
Mine too.
There's now a few brands of these, and they're available around the world. A menstrual cup is a soft, bell-shaped item, which is used inside the vagina to collect the flow instead of absorb it. These are removed, and they can be emptied, rinsed out, replaced. They can be boiled in a pot of water to be sterilized before and after each period, or you can use hot water and vinegar. And one cup can last many, many years. And these can be used while swimming, sleeping, and it does not have the same TSS risks as tampons. They also have a much greater capacity than tampons and can safely be kept in place for 12 hours.
One other cool thing about the menstrual cup is it comes in two different sizes. One size for women who have not given birth, and then a different size for women who have. So it's really nice that that's something that's taken into consideration as well. So the last option that we have listed here that we want to talk to you about are cloth pads. So essentially, these are a washable fabric version of the disposable menstrual pad. They're mostly made by small businesses, and they come in a huge variety of types. They use all sorts of different fabrics, such as bamboo or cotton. I make my own, and I like to use flannel. And they can be very absorbent, and some even include a waterproof layer to give the same security as a disposable pad. Also, colorful fabrics can add to the positive aspect of using these, and some manufacturers use nice fabrics like velour. So cloth pads can be reused for many years. After they have been worn, they can be rinsed clean or left to soak and washed in a washing machine with the rest of the laundry. One thing that some women like to do with the leftover water from the pads or the blood from your menstrual cup, sometimes they dilute this water and put it in their gardens. And the blood gives extra nutrients to the plants. So if you're into that, that's also another option.
So we're going to keep talking about menstruation and health. And we're going to take a turn now to talk about period suppression. So 40 years ago, women saw the pill as a way to gain crucial control over family planning and attain time and energy for life pursuits beyond labor, delivery, and childcare. It was a huge coup, and women suddenly had options that they didn't have before. According to USA Today, the FDA approved the first birth control pill to stop women's periods indefinitely in 2007. If this sounds strange or scary to you, you may be interested to know that about half the women in the studies for this drug dropped out due to irregular and unscheduled bleeding and spotting that could last 4 to 5 days for the first year that replaced their scheduled menstruation. It's like our bodies are trying to tell us something. What could it be? There are other pills on the market, too, that are designed to shorten monthly periods to 3 days or less, or down to only 4 times per year. According to the Canadian Women's Health Network, the Society for Menstrual Cycle Research stated simply that menstruation is not a disease. Further research on the potential health risks and long-term safety of cycle-stopping contraception is still needed, particularly addressing the impacts on adolescent development, since young women and girls are a target audience for cycle-stopping contraceptives. These contraceptives do not only reduce or eliminate menstrual bleeding, they also suppress the complex hormonal interplay of the menstrual cycle. The impacts of this cycle on women's health are not completely understood. The Society noted that it is also important that research address the social, psychological, and cultural implications of menstrual suppression, as well as the biomedical effects. And they remain concerned that pharmaceutical campaigns used to market cycle-stopping contraception depict the menstrual cycle as abnormal, undesirable, unnecessary, and even unhealthy. And of course, they're not alone. Women have been getting these messages their whole lives. Messages telling us that processes associated with women's bodies are defective or need to be medically controlled can lead to negative body image, especially in young women. And this reminds me of the fact that fat hatred and other oppressions result in extreme eating disorders, and that can also lead to period suppression. So in these cases, it's a pretty strong sign from the body that things are not okay. Medical sociologists and feminists have questioned the need for a pill like this for most women who don't bleed or suffer intensely during their periods, pointing out that it's a pretty normal life event and not a medical condition. So why medicate something that just happens in your body and doesn't have any negative effects other than some women who do have a lot of pain, if we're not sure of the long-term effects? So hormones in birth control pills can actually cause deadly side effects like blood clots and stroke. No doubt the pill has been a huge lifesaver for many women who have had so much to manage, and not having to deal with a hemorrhaging or painful period on top of it all is useful. And ultimately, it's entirely likely that women wouldn't have such a rough time with their periods if we weren't dealing with stress, environmental toxins, chemically altered and non-nutritious food, psychological trauma and physical trauma, and other things that we manage daily. Our bodies tell us a lot of things that we aren't able to respond to generously. And so I think that our bodies tell us a lot of things about when things aren't going right, and then to just suppress that with pharmaceuticals seems highly suspect to me, when perhaps we could actually be dealing with some preventative measures.
For sure. One thing that I really appreciate about my period is ever since I started using the Diva Cup, I'm really connected with my flow, and I get to see any changes that happen, and I think it's really important. Oftentimes if your body's rhythm changes. Some people have irregular periods and they come at different times, but for myself anyhow, mine come very regularly. And if something shifts and changes, that's my body telling me something. It's telling me that there's something that I should be taking stock of and maybe giving myself some more care.
Absolutely. It's interesting to note that we don't tend to associate the end of periods with a lack of femininity. Yet, a vasectomy seems to threaten masculinity so much that people don't tend to opt for this really low-risk, hormone-free, highly effective method of birth control. It just seems normal and acceptable that women's bodies be put at risk to disrupt the cycle that produces life, to even out moods that might be inconvenient, and to tackle pain and discomfort that could be eased through other less destructive or preventative methods. It has become so normal to control, manage, and regulate bodies for acceptable femininity that even the most harmful and unnecessary products or procedures are everywhere.
So in closing, we just want to share a passage by Asphodel Pilong, where she envisions a world where women get to define menstruation differently. So this is what she says. But could we think again? Is not this attitude a true working of patriarchy? Women do live on a monthly cycle. Instead of burying it, why not make something of it? Jesus remarked that the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. He was wrong. The Sabbath was made by and for women. There's ample precedent from the past for women's days, where men and women would wait on and bring food to women who are living apart from them, perhaps just in another room or even a part of the room. To bring home nowadays to men that women are in a special condition, are communing with themselves, are on the dark side of the moon, and may gain inspiration to sort out problems and deal better with everyday life, is not this a break in their patriarchal conditioning? And could not children be taught from the very earliest moment that on Mother's Days every month, she has to be treated in an extra special way and demands not be made on her all the time? Remembering all the time that the new moon rises after the old has slipped away, other people could start getting used to our cycles and benefiting from them. We could break the ties of the man's world. Using our menstrual cycle, we could start showing what a woman's world is like. I believe that women regaining confidence through the explicit demonstration of their cycle and its powers in life could move from many conflicts within themselves into a female-defined world. This would create a marvelous crack in the armor of patriarchy and might help us all to break through to a world where being female will be a delight and a powerful lever of change. So, with those departing words from a fierce feminist theologian, Asfo Del Pilong, we conclude our show. We hope they inspire you to start thinking of menstruation in a new way.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the F Word today. You can hear us live every Monday at noon on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, or you can listen online at coopradio.org. If you have any comments or feedback, you can email us at feminisms@gmail.com. And if you miss the show, you can always find our podcasts on rabble.ca. You can learn more about us, check out our blog, and find archives of past shows and information about future shows on our website at feminisms.org. The F Word is syndicated at Pacifica Radio and airs in Texas on KEOS Community Radio 89.1 FM, in Michigan on Public Reality Radio WPRR 95.3 FM, and in Winnipeg, Manitoba on CJUM 101.5 FM. Pacifica is a listener-supported community radio network of commercial-free stations. You can go to pacifica.org for more information. And if you like the show, you can request that your local station includes the F-word in their programming.